This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With eight delicious flavors, you are guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office, and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another product. With amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.
Our next partner has a product I use every day. I started taking Athletic Greens because I wanted a simple all-in-one solution as opposed to the ever-changing variety of supplements I have been taking for as long as I can remember. Sometimes up to 3 ramekins a day full of pills and powders trying to find the right formula for peak performance. Now that I've been taking Athletic Greens for a few months, I love it, and I will never go back. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food-sourced superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. I take one scoop in the morning on an empty stomach, and an additional one in the evening when I am feeling run down. I have seen such a difference in my own performance that I recently ordered additional AG1 for the rest of my family to use. It costs you less than $3 a day, you're investing in your health, and it's cheaper than your cold brew habit, and supports better sleep quality and recovery, in addition to mental clarity and alertness. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/contacts. Again, this is athleticgreens.com/contacts to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Welcome to the Contacts Coaching Podcast, dedicated to bringing you practical ideas from coaches, sharing what they have learned throughout their career. The show is designed to serve as a digital database of mentorship from a wide network of coaches whose innovative, reflective, and diverse knowledge may offer ideas to enhance your experience. In addition to sport-specific expertise, each episode also dives into the ways in which culture, strategy, and tactics can cross from one discipline to another. I'm your host, Justin Klein.
Welcome back to the Contacts Coaching Podcast. We are joined today by Coach Woz, Mike Wozniak, college basketball analyst and coach in the three ball organization in San Luis Obispo, where both of my children go to college. Coach, thanks for jumping on so we can finally get this conversation happening.
It's been too long, Justin. It's a pleasure to be on this. You've done so many great things with connecting people in the right way. Obviously some buddies, but just the love of sport and the love of connecting. I'd be remiss, man. We're talking hoops right now. We're talking fun, but it's Ryder Cup week. I know where you live, and I absolutely know the proximity you have to fantastic golf up there on the peninsula. So I'm just saying right now, if I get a little distracted, I got the golf channel on. It's an important time of year.
No problem. Last time you were up, there was some golf stuff going on. So you know how crazy that is when those things are happening. So I totally understand. But that aside, let's dive in. Traditionally, I'm asking questions along the lines of how'd you get into coaching? Take us through that background. But given the multiple hats that you're wearing right now, I'm going to revise the question to just talk about, how did you get involved in sports to begin with? What was the playing career like? How'd that transition to coaching happen? And how did ultimately you end up on the other side of the mic analyzing these games at the level that you do? If you could give us a nice contextual grounding, I think it would be very helpful for all of us to understand exactly who we're dealing with here.
Well, I appreciate that question because I've never really been one to talk about myself. But when people ask, I like to share the background because we all come from somewhere and we also have to have a level of respect and appreciation for what our parents have done for us. And I'd be nowhere without my parents, my father, my mother, who we lost about 16 years ago. But I grew up in Indiana. My first word was ball. If you can understand that from that state, then you would know that I fell in love with basketball at a young age. Crisscrossed the country a little bit at a young age, lived in South Carolina for a small blip. Texas was really my most instrumental and influential sports background. There I lived down in just east of Dallas and Rockwall from basically the 6th through the 10th grade before moving back to Indiana and graduating from Carmel High School right there in the northern part of Indianapolis. I was very fortunate that my family moved us a lot, and it made it a lot easier for me to come out to California and go to school at Cal Poly. I think the history of what I've done as an athlete has everything together been pedigreed. What my parents taught me at a young age, and my younger brother, my younger sister as well. We moved around the country, mostly for my dad's job, but we were always able to acclimate with people and things that we believed in. So basketball has always been a huge part of my life. Growing up in that state, just the atmosphere and surrounding to it. And I played golf, I played baseball, I played quarterback all the way up into high school. But really, once I made a decision to choose the basketball, I knew that was in my roots, middle school type age. So I've been very fortunate after coming out to California. We could talk more about that. But a lot of my infrastructure, growth, development happened by my dad just immersing me in spots that were going to challenge me. I think I'll be eternally grateful. And I take a lot of this stuff for how I coach now. And trying to put young people in spots of growth opportunity. It's not supposed to be easy. And reflecting in that way from how we did it way back when, we used to call it, hey, we got to go find the meat. The meat could be a challenge in the workout. The meat could be getting uncomfortable in a little different culture surrounding in any sport too. It could have been sports, it could have been music, it could have been all that. But really a high level of respect and appreciation from what my parents did for me and our family, getting us around the country. And then ultimately evolving into my decision to come out to California. I mixed in the radio, obviously, after my playing days. I do a daily talk show on our ESPN affiliate here in San Luis Obispo. We talk all things national sports, the seasonal topic sports professionally. We do a lot of college stuff, obviously Cal Poly stuff. I still announce a lot of the Cal Poly basketball games via traditional radio and the ESPN Plus endeavor. And then about 15 years ago, I picked up with Compass Media. We had an old producer here, close buddy, that was a Cal Poly grad, got involved with Compass Media, and I've been one of their college basketball analysts for about last 15 years. So we do Big Ten, ACC, crisscross the country during the times of college basketball times. And it's really helped me connect and stay connected to one of my passions, which is college basketball. I figured out early on I didn't want to be a college basketball coach. That's a whole nother discussion. But it also evolved into what I really, truly love doing. Is helping young people accomplish their next step in sports. So three ball is really derived around a couple things. There's skill development, there's life skills, but we live by the three words and mantra of train, compete, and share. But as you can see within this, we give these kids an expectation when they come in. And our first level is always going to be respect. And it says respect for your parents, your school, books before basketball, your teammates. There's a much bigger culture, I think, that goes into coaching and leading young people. And as it develops and really helps them become better young people, better doctors, better lawyers. It's always funny, as you do at a prestigious school that you're at, seeing where these kids eventually utilize sports, and in my case, basketball, as a vehicle for something else. So a lot of fun in between where I'm at right now. We can dig into the weeds and you can grind me on a couple things, because really coming out to Cal Poly was arguably the best decision of my life. Having an opportunity to play for 4 years, start for 4 years. Some would say the records were earned. Others would say that the records were by attempts. But as far as one of my basketball mantras, man, if you're, and when in doubt, shoot, played into my hands and had a great time out here in California.
Oh, man, that made me laugh. I got to get recenter here for my follow-up. Lots of stuff we're going to talk about on the show today.
Sure.
And where I want to start, because you've mentioned it a couple times, that coming out to California, Cal Poly in specific, was a transformational moment. And What I want to follow up on is the power of network and your Compass Media, your ESPN piece, the connection between, I would say, landing these opportunities, because obviously you were prepared and you worked for them, and then the intersectionality of relationship and preparation leads to opportunity, right? But it's, can you talk a little bit about how much your network has allowed you to have opportunities in different spaces? Because I think it's something that is undervalued and appreciated by the majority of the people in the world. And given what you described as moving around as a kid, ultimately coming out here, and how you've been able to leverage those opportunities into a professional career, I would just love to get your take on that for both the coaches that are listening, parents that are listening, but anybody in regards to what we talk about often in my life is your net worth is your network. And how are you making deposits into that network that at some point you may or may not need to take a withdrawal?
Well, it's a great point. And I think one of the things my mother taught me at an early age was the word genuine. And when you connect with people, for the most part, you can fool them once or twice, but you're not going to fool the important people a multitude of times. So that's one thing that I've always tried to do, whether I'm coaching a kid, talking to a parent, broadcasting accurately or honestly about a kid's shortcomings or successes, whether he plays for Duke or whether he plays for Cal Poly, trying to give a genuine and prepared reason for why stuff happens. So I would think that word genuine right off the bat helps you keep a network of people, not only that you're earning their trust, but they trust your perspective on things. I'm constantly asked, especially with coaching little kids, hey, well, what do I need to do next? A parent will ask me that. And I say, well, I'll give them an honest answer. I said, I'm not going to fool you or detour you into something you don't want to do. But I think a genuine answer, people can see through it or they can absorb it. So that's one of those things. I think when you talk about the mixture of radio and coaching and really how this business has evolved, to be honest, we see so many former players quickly get into the media, and they can do it with their connections. They can do it obviously through social media, but they can do it in a flamboyance that sometimes is a look at me type of moment. Look, you can ask my dad, you can ask my close friends. I'm not a look at me type of guy. And people ask me, hey, why don't you do more TV? I said, of course, the old moniker, face for radio. But I've just genuinely more been attracted to trying to describe something in succinct, short windows of what's going on. And that happens in coaching a lot, too. A lot of coaches will be out there 15, 20 minutes blabbing about something. And I've utilized my radio stuff into basketball and vice versa so much, and just how to connect genuinely with people. So I think that's the key word right there, making an honest effort to help another. And if you can ever find time to put yourself second behind others, and more times than not, you're going to have some success. So this is all stuff that other coaches and other people believe in, but it's something I try to live on a daily basis, whether I'm coaching or bringing the airwaves to life through calling sports.
So I want to go right back at something you just said in regards to using the lessons of radio when you are coaching and short sound bites. And I was watching my son's football practice finish yesterday. I show up at the end to get him, and they sat around in a circle and talked for 15 minutes. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm wandering around, I'm like, I don't know if that's the best use of our time based on the attention span of these 13-year-olds, but to each his own. All of that to set the ground for, can you give some specifics in regards to where that realization has served you? And where others can maybe steal a few lessons and tactical tools that you've figured out by being in radio and then still coaching both at the high school and at the club level.
Yeah, super important there, because your audience is, or at least the one you're directing your message to, is the most important person. It's not the crowd. It's not the other team. It's not the officials. And I think in radio, specifically calling college basketball, the professional analyst is a little different, in which the play-by-play guy with the shorter shot clocks, they're rolling more. The color guy in the NBA gets his less time. In college, it's a little different. And I'd be remiss if I said I haven't worked with a number of tremendous play-by-play guys. And I try to feed off them and be second to them, obviously. But 4 to 5 seconds, and that can be long at times. So once you groom yourself and understand that, from the radio side of things, again, from the analyst, the game perspective. Now, my radio show is different. I might have to sit there and explain why I feel that the Boston Celtics trade and losing Marcus Smart is something that they're not going to recover from, or Dame Lillard coming over to the Bucks now is going to work or not work. That's a different message. But as far as coaching, I think there's a very good link to short messages to kids, whether it's at a timeout, whether it's at a free throw, whether it's either at a dead ball inbounds. I was getting on some of our high school guys the other day of not having immediate eyes to me when we have a baseline out of bounds. It's like your eyes should be on me in 0.5 seconds, and I want our inbounder to be the last person to be ready in that spot. It's like we've got to be succinct in our communication, both eyes and ears, and I groom them that way through our training. But I think it's ultimately important, especially in the game of basketball, to give messages that are reminders of what you train, and more importantly, that can affect the outcome, which we're trying to win. We're trying to have some success, but you can't overload them. You can't give them too much. You can't have the 15-minute halftimes, like you were saying. I just think there's a tremendous parallel in getting information out quickly and succinctly through what I do in radio and absolutely helping a kid on the court.
Yeah, no doubt. I totally agree with what you just said. And I think because you brought it up, for those of you that are basketball coaches and athletes listening on inbounds plays, sideline or baseline, whoever the inbounder is, don't step out of bounds until you got everybody organized. That's just a life hack, because the ref's handing you the ball. And if you're not out of bounds, then they can't give you the ball. So take that, do what you want with it. But back to the other piece, coach. I'm going to go left to come back right. You mentioned early that you realized you didn't want to coach college basketball. Why not? And coming back right, how did you end up involved in youth and high school basketball when you decided you didn't want to coach college basketball?
Yeah, great memories that you just stoked there. So again, born in Northwest Indiana, my parents were born and raised in Gary. I've been back there a number of years. There's obviously a different culture up there now, but have a great affinity for how the region, greater Chicagoland, grew up in their sports, their acumen, their competitiveness, all of it. As I said, my parents went to Indiana State, and Larry Bird was the first ever NBA player to hold me when I was a youngster. We used to go to the games, follow along. That's one of the reasons we were Celtics fans growing up. But as far as some of my early influences, basketball, I was very fortunate, I think, in the greater area of Carmel and Indianapolis to have peers and growing up and playing with it against guys like Micah Shrewsbury and Brad Stevens. And there was a collection of us that were young and hungry basketball players, maybe not the best basketball players when you look at our background of where we ultimately played at a level, but we were studiers, we were competitors, we were guys that paid attention. Whether Shrews going to Hanover or Brad over at DePaul, it was one of those decisions where I had an option to stay in the middle part of the country to go to college and play basketball. I opted to come to California. And the decision I made not to be a college basketball coach, if I'm being honest with you, I would say that it would have changed my life knowing how maybe consumed I would have been on some of the work that put in after the fact. But I learned, because I finished in 4 years, I went and traveled and played professionally in the IBA and then in the ABA, different now. The G League back in the mid to late 90s wasn't there. But I gave a shot. I played. I quickly realized that the life and times of a minor league professional hooper wasn't going to be ideal. And I had a chance to come back to Cal Poly and earn my master's in business. And while doing that, I was a grad assistant for the basketball team. And that's how I stuck in to, again, rules of how many coaches could be on the bench. It was severely limiting back then. They told, hey, you're not allowed to be on the bench because there's X number of coaches that could be there. So there were some inhibitors there early on in my coaching career, if you will. But that's one of the ways I got to sit right on the side of the court, call radio, sit right next to the play-by-play guy and do that. But really the impetus of me deciding not to get involved in college basketball was a little bit about scheduling, but more so realizing what assistants had to do for players that maybe weren't as serious as the game as I was. I won't name names, but when assistant coaches had to wake up early to go over to check on Joey X because he wasn't going to class, and waking up to lift weights, and I just couldn't comprehend that someone needed to be babysat. And in early in my career, I thought, let me work with guys that want to be worked with. And fortunately, the career that I had at Cal Poly, there were plenty of parents and people within the community. It's, I want laws to teach my kid how to shoot. I want him to help him on free throws. And that's how three ball evolved, to be honest with you, too. I found my coaching itch through helping young people take the next step. And so I skewed away from college, but I obviously use radio to fill that void. I still go to a ton of basketball practices, whether I'm on the road or pregame shoot arounds, and obviously still connected with Cal Poly. But I just found three ball as a way, skills development, life skills, have evolved it into games and tournaments and clinics and working with some of your buddies at PGC. It's just such a connective experience. And I think, selfishly speaking, it was a little bit more about my schedule and the people I got to choose to work with. And I never want to sound self-serving on that, but if you can design something that's fun, progressive, and beneficial to others, then you're really living the dream. And I ask people all the time, say, oh, what do you do? I said, I have three hobbies. I'm coaching, developing through three ball. I'm calling national radio games. And then I'm talking sports on a day-to-day basis. I don't know if that's what you wanted, but that's in the short nut. But I have always said, if a close buddy got a legitimate college job that I really aligned with and agreed with, I still have young kids, which I maximize my time as much as I can with them, a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. It's always been a priority to me. I mentioned my parents earlier that I just couldn't imagine a son or a daughter not looking up to their parents and being so thankful for what they have done for them. And on a day-to-day basis, I try to do that for my kids. It's a lot of life skills. It's a lot of sports, but it's a lot of fun, to be honest.
Yeah. And I think you summarizing at the end is not self-serving. It's actually the choices people have to make in any career path or chase or whatever it is, because coaching college basketball at a particular school or level is going to be different depending on what the expectations are. And as you said, carving out your own niche within the sport and within the sports landscapes that allows you to participate at the level you want is the dream. And for those that are younger in their careers, and I don't mean necessarily younger humans, but they're early in career, it's like there's a fork at some point. And it's like chasing college basketball is a path. Going and coaching high school is a path. Going and coaching youth is a path, right? Not coaching at all, going into business, whatever. Point is, I love that you did the regression analysis on what do I want and what are the things that I'm going to get from here or here, and how do I and to do it all, which leads me to my follow-up within three ball. You mentioned earlier a version of what I say all the time, which is athletics are a vehicle to teach leadership, followership, and how to be part of something bigger than yourself. And you mentioned that with basketball. What is the overarching template that allows you to consistently deliver stickiness, let's call it, in your messaging with your three ball athletes, but also the high school athletes you work with or anybody else that you come into contact with, where you can offer that as not a system per se, but as like, hey, this is where your energy goes. This is what you constantly talk through. The basketball is just the vehicle to teach those things. Can you offer a little bit about your thinking around that and how you deliver those messages?
Absolutely, because life is a subset of skills, and how we deploy those skills is ultimately important to our success. So if we just look at basketball, good example, I recently created what I call our SBS workout. It stands for Skills, Bucket, and Stars. And again, my son, who's 5, happens to be one of the younger participants in it. But really, a requirement is, can you listen and engage in it to start in our program? I say it all the time. You could be 14 and not pay attention, or you could be 7 and have it figured out as far as accepting instruction and working hard. But I this was in the last year or so, I never used to work with young athletes because I found it more challenging to be efficient in the workout and create an atmosphere that I thought was progressive. But to get back to your original point, what are the sticky points of it? When you evaluate a person and a player, I never try to make the first couple workouts about basketball. I give them 2 rules when I introduce with their parents and their family. I said, hi, nice to meet you. You have 2 responsibilities today, to sweat and to smile. And if you can do those 2 things, we will agree to move forward and figure out if you can work hard using your eyes and ears as a tremendous weapon to get better. And so I constantly talk with parents about what it means to have a subset of skills. I'm huge on footwork. I'm huge from a basketball side, huge on footwork, Obviously, you got to be in control of the basketball. We develop footwork and form and shooting from all that. But really what I look for in young athletes is the ability to connect quickly with eyes and ears. And a lot of times that can take some time. But foundationally speaking, we genuinely try to create our program. Our high school program within three ball is not pluck and pry kids from all over the area and try to put a team together that's competitive. A lot of our teams that have been most successful at the high school ranks have been guys that have been generated organically through the program. They work well together. The parent group works together. And in many ways, our club system is very much like a traditional school model, and that these kids would have been together for a number of years and they would have some sort of umbrella experience that they know what the expectations are. But you're right. You got to develop that early on. The sticky messages of all we have on our little player cards. We have life skills on the front, but we have our non-negotiables on the back with what we talk about on defense and what we talk about on offense. It's try to keep it simple too. Like defensively for a young kid, they're not going to know zones and traps and all this. It's, hey, our first rule, you see that basketball? It's got to be uncomfortable. Bump the ball. You got to protect the rim. And you start at the minuscule foundations. And I think that gives me great perspective when I go coach a college game and I'm with Tom Izzo or sitting in Champaign, Illinois, watching Illinois' offensive fast break get going. The transformational stuff starts at such a young age, and then they just multiply it as they get physically more fit and better. But to answer your question, honestly, it's about connecting with the athlete and making sure that they can see a path and a way that little things turn into big things. And we've been fortunate in our area to help young kids. I tell them all the time, your primary goal is to become a relevant varsity player. And if you do the stuff that we do, more than likely you're going to be on the team. And your goal is to be a relevant, meaning, am I in the game in the last 5 minutes because my coach trusts me? It may not happen your freshman year, but it'll happen if you put the time and the work in and you see the bigger picture. And I think most coaches in the area would say that we've done a pretty good job of making sure that at least the guys that have pushed it to the level that they wanted are relevant when they come out of our program. So that's really a goal for them. Life skills, communication, but also having those tools that have been developed at a young age to make sure they're not skipping steps.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think what you mentioned in the transferability that you see both at a foundational level and at, let's call it, an elite level, when you mentioned Tom Izzo, it's all connected. And it's about what I often say to people is Shawshank, right? Pressure and time. You just got to keep working at it and building the volume, and ultimately you get to that relevancy. Let me follow up with this. I usually ask something along the lines of what's the best thing that you do in your program that you would do regardless wherever you go somewhere else. And I get both tangible and figurative answers to that. But given your role as a college basketball analyst, as a talk show guy, as somebody that has a ton of access, let's call it, what I'm really curious about with you, Waz, is what are a handful of the best things that you've seen programs do that you have since either adopted and or put in your Rolodex for the next time you have an opportunity to utilize something like that? And you can thank the passer if you need to and who you got it from, but I'm always trying to offer some tangible takeaways for people that it's like, hey, this is a separator if you think about something like X.
Yeah. First of all, in our program, I think one of the things I've always tried to do is create advantage, disadvantage games. And so we do that every single practice, whether it's 3v4, 4v3, 2v1. And even to the point where the whistle, and the kids pick up on this quite quickly, where the whistle is obviously biased. The whistle is obviously and intentionally trying to get under your skin, or the score may change miraculously because, no, coach just said the score is 2-1. It's not 3-0. And so thickening young kids through their experience of, what do you mean? That's not right. Oh, it's not. Okay. That's the new ground rule. Disadvantage games of how we, again, 4-on-3s, 3-on-4s, and this isn't a schematic show, but you get the gist of putting guys in peril. They've got to figure out how I just got fouled. I just got pushed out of bounds. The whistle didn't blow. And there's a beautiful basketball portion and potion of that. I know to use Tom Izzo again, he's notorious for having his guys do rebound drills with football pads on. And it's not something we can do at the youth level necessarily, but taking that thick skinnedness and helping it to, you live in a privileged spot, as do I, as do a lot of people, and getting them, the saying's been used forever, being more comfortable, uncomfortable, is just simply that I try to do in every one of our workouts. As far as the actual basketball quotient, look, there's so much more technology than we used to have. I actually found some old VHS tapes the other day of my high school career that I haven't watched in ages. Now we just jump on Synergy or YouTube or somewhere and we watch and pick out. I was showing our kids the other day the difference in how Team USA basketball lost to Germany on those three-point attempts versus what went on in the third place game against Canada. It was drastically different how Germany punished the paint, kicked out for threes, and then in the Canadian game, how they didn't guard the three and they stepped into shots. So I think the video utilization of what I steal from college is huge. I'll show them instances of inbounds plays, transition offense. Why can't a kid run the wing and run hard like a Michigan State fast break offense? Do you not understand where the three-point line is? Do you not see the sideline? It's these guys can do it. Open your eyes and do it correctly. I constantly pick and pry from the college game, pick out small scenarios. And I think that's one of the more unannounced skill sets me and my staff bring to these kids and these parents. You've got parents. They're not watching basketball. They're not studying basketball. They're dropping their kid off and they're going to shop and pick up dinner for the night. They don't really know what we're teaching, but I know within our program and our expectation, we're trying to teach them the skills and the relevance at the most high, at the highest level, and then pare it down to what that they can comprehend. Disadvantage games, film usage, stealing scenarios that are applicable in any type of game, and then occasionally have them have fun and let them watch Kevin Durant or James Harden kill the grass and go score and do something that maybe our program doesn't necessarily align with is watch one guy go do him.
Yeah, no doubt. That's where the game is a little different depending on the level that you're at. But yeah. I want to take that and interweave it with your background growing up, where you played a bunch of different things and obviously gravitated towards basketball. You run an academy that's essentially year-round minus hoop season. And then you have a daily talk show where you talk about all sports. So what I'm curious about is how do you find the balance between what the research shows, which is you should participate in a bunch of different endeavors, and what the youth sports industrial complex has pushed over the last 15 years, that specialization is important and should occur. How do you walk that line, and how do you message to your kids about the value of what you can learn doing other things?
I put it in all of our family updates that I encourage these kids to play more than basketball, especially at young ages, because I'm a believer in it. I believe in tackle football, not for the injury and the unsafetiness of it, but for the collectiveness, the toughness. I learned pretty early on living in Texas that there were four sports. There was football, basketball was fourth, baseball was third, and then off-season football was second. And the beauty of that state, I'll never forget, just playing in and around better athletes, but to be so multi-tooled. And we've seen the transformation of good level college basketball kids and Antonio Gates. I played against Anthony Gonzalez. Like, the ability to have a way to use all your skill sets has been groomed at a young age. And so back to your factory question, I'm not a guy that says, hey, you have to be all in at three ball. I've intentionally designed our three ball program so that kids can do other sports. We have kids that some come 3 days a week, 4 days a week, others come once a week. And I think that's one of the things I've learned is to not corner people. I don't beg people to be a part of our program. I say, here's what we're going to provide. Here's what we're going to consistently offer. And it's going to be up to you to let us know what works in your schedule. Now, if you want to get more serious and play games on things, yes. But I'm with you, Justin. We dabble down to bigger events all the time, whether it's Vegas, LA. I've had a couple beautiful trips. I've taken kids back to my home state of Indiana and played in tournaments, but at the same time played football in Lucas Oil. We'll go over to the Indy 500, use some of my connections there as far as experiencing, again, using sports as a vehicle. But I think to answer overall the writing question is, I think parents are being disingenuous to their son or daughter if they're going to think and put the pressure on them at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 that they've got to be a pitcher, or they got to be a hockey player, or they've got to be a quarterback. That's obviously a trickle up. Youth sports has affected, obviously, high school, but it's affecting college right now. How many of these kids are in the portal right now because they played on 15 or 16 different youth teams? We know the genesis of it all. I'm not behind it. It's painful. There's money grabs galore. The other day I saw $17 parking just to go to a youth sports tournament. Not to get in the door, $17 parking to park your car to go to the game. And it's just, wow. And so it can be painful on a lot of fronts, but I haven't let them break me yet as far as, again, being genuine to our parents and our families. And then the other things I do is always try to make our trips as efficient as possible. We utilize day trips. We try to give kids the amount of exposure that, hey, they're playing soccer, they're playing football, but they still want to dabble in little hoops because there's nothing like basketball. You got to reboot, reprocess every 2 to 3 to 4 seconds and you get your substitution patterns. But man, you can never relax in that game. And if you do, it's going to pass you by. So the youth machine, as you call it, it can be sickening. But I think for the strong people and the right-minded will people, they're going to design their program in a way that doesn't let that cancer infect really what they're trying to do to help their young kids.
Yeah, for sure. And the follow-up to that is obviously, why are they going for that message to begin with, right? And what I've often experienced in the 25 years I've been doing this is people don't know what they don't know. And so ultimately, where are they getting their messaging? What is the intention behind said messaging? How are you combating that messaging? And what I really want to follow with is, given the nature of the athletes you've worked with over the years, given the fact that you had a really successful career 20 years ago where you've seen behind the curtain, right? You've been behind the curtain as a coach. How do you work with your athletes and players to help correct, for lack of a better word, the messaging that is probably not accurate to the reality of the situation, right? What's your strategy there? Because telling people they're wrong never lands well, but hell, the last 3 or 4 years with the transfer portal, everything's gone out the window anyway. So it's like, what is your strategy? What is your advice? What is your approach to help people understand the reality versus whatever snake oil is being sold, not by Three Ball per se, but by the youth sports industrial complex?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, at least in our program, that I try to do on a consistent basis is make our workouts, our practices, our times that when we are together as A-plus as possible. And a good example of this is, how efficient can you be in a workout to make sure, again, your kid is sweaty, your kid is smiling, and they're progressing and learning skills that they may or may not be able to do? Our workouts are a little different in that if little Johnny is messing up on his layups, we're not going to stop practice and just say, hey, do it this way. It's going to be more through absorption and the reps of them paying attention and kind of over the course of time. But the argument, or at least the goal I have within our program, let more games aren't the answer. And too many parents get behind the thing of, I got 4 games this weekend, 6 games next weekend, 7 there. Games are important, but the preparation going into them are even more. And so I come away with this. I invite, I beg, I don't demand because it's their time. I want parents to watch our practices. I cringe sometimes when high school coaches, at least at the younger levels, like the freshmen and JV, they say, no, you can't come in and watch our practice. And I think a lot of times a parent, if they are observing correctly, they're going to see that their player is either shining or struggling in certain areas. And they're going to say, whoa, okay, you are a little bit more behind, without the coach even having to tell them. Now, you have to be organized correctly in order to do that. You go in there and it's just a circus and the kids aren't doing anything correctly, then a parent's going to have even more ammo on you. But if you're organized correctly, I'm actually a proponent of parents watching practice and getting perspective of what exactly is being taught. And then it ultimately comes to a conversation of your son or daughter is or is not doing what they should be doing. And those are the tough conversations. But at a youth level, I've tried to use our practice competitiveness, our practice skill sets as a way and as an ammo to somewhat neutralize the big system of I've got to go play on this team because we've got this amount of games and this coach says, pay me this money and it gets you X amount of workouts and games here. It's just not how I've ever designed our program. And I think over the course of time, they learn so much more within our practices than they do within our games. And then some of our best players, I always joke, we've had 3 players play in the NFL and 0 in the NBA. So we're not really doing our job enough. We got to keep working. The 60s, the 70s, the 80s of kids that have been able to play sports past high school, it's because they've spent so much more time on their own. Nobody knows a kid like their parent, but the kid is ultimately going to have to use some sort of motivation and skill set to spend some time on their own. If a parent is smart, they're going to invest in those options rather than crisscrossing the country to maximize their game experience. It can just be a painful reality that most don't see. But when I tell a parent, I'm not telling you what to do, but this is an opinion based on 20, 23 years of doing this that I've seen work in this area. Again, it comes back to being genuine with a parent, genuine with the kid.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think to your point, those, I don't want to even call them difficult, but those conversations that are uncomfortable at times, especially for the receiver, are super important. And you have people, like I said, that don't know what they don't know because they once upon a time long ago had a college experience. They now are the expert in that space. It's hold on. When we were in college 25 years ago, it's not the same deal. And things have shifted, and 3% of the world plays college athletics. If you're pushing your chips in on the craps table and you got a 3% chance of winning, are you putting all your energy into that? Or are you going to diversify a little bit? So I don't think people think about that in the same way that they do in the other aspects of their life. So I appreciate that perspective. Let me go here. Sports are great because failure and feedback are so quick relative to everything else that you do. What are maybe some transformational moments or one in particular along your journey where you experienced failure that then allowed you to grow into the space you are now that you can name and talk through as don't shy away from these lessons. They're important.
Mm-hmm. I was telling a story to one of our young assistants that just jumped on board the other day. He actually used to play for me within 3-ball and had a good high school career and is now wanting to get into a little coaching. And I tell him the story about one of the first times I ever took a 3-ball team to a tournament. And we had our plays set up and we're going to run this play and we got to pass the ball this direction. And then it's got to go over here. And then we got pressed and all your half court plays were out the window. And I came to that realization within about 6 months of coaching that we don't coach plays in our program. We coach sequences. We coach really circumstances that are going to evolve over the course of time. And I know I've talked about disadvantage games and all that, but it's so much about equipping a player with what the habit and the skill set. Like I'm huge on how guys catch the ball on offense. If you can't catch the ball correctly, you can't make good decisions. And this goes in, we painfully see it in college and professional, not necessarily the traveling or the turnovers, but they limit themselves in what they can or can't do on how they catch the ball. And so we work religiously on situations in which they've got to catch the ball more correctly to make better decisions. And it flows from there. But I think the biggest thing I learned as a young coach, and there's been hundreds of others, but I remember that more. I'll never forget that eye awakening experience. It's not about plays with kids. It's about equipping them with the skill set that they're going to be able to keep their head above water when the pressure hits, the turnover hits, the whatever scenario is unfair hits. It's one of those that we evolved early on in our program. We're not play-based, we're situational, or we're scenario-based. How do you play as a 3-on-3 player? What do you do in all our chips, our loops, our double screen actions. It's concepts that are applicable to anything in basketball. And I think that's been my overriding really joy because that's always been one of my angles. I've had an eye for offense a little bit more, even though my buddy said I never rebounded or I was a top 5 guy in our program in steals. Come on, I was there a little bit. Now, granted, we pressed the whole game and our style was around fake and faux defense when we pressed, but Look, offense to me is the most important part of the game when you think about developing the kid's skill set. You can always make them try harder, get in the right position on defense, box out. Like anybody can play defense. Not everybody can play offense. And that's definitely been one of my things in three ball is that I'll try to teach good offense because it eventually improves defense. And that's been one of the things that I've tried to implement in our program is getting our guys to be reliable, consistent players on that end of the floor. And plus, it's more fun too for kids. A kid's going to have more fun, but the better players ultimately buy into the defensive stance and then they're equipped on both sides. So I think that shift early on in my career of staying away from plays, but teaching more sequences within our offensive structure has helped immensely with all of that.
I appreciate that. And it leads me to my follow-up, which will probably be our last question as well, which I usually ask, what is something you have most recently changed your mind on? So if that was early on in the first 6 months that you realized that teach them to be players, not to run plays, what is something that, hell, may not even be basketball related? It might be in your radio gig. It might be at home as a parent. But I always ask the growth mindset question of how are we analyzing our beliefs? How are we challenging them? So what's something that you've most recently changed your mind on from, I used to be over here and dug in, and now I'm over here and here's why?
Yeah, it's something that I'm still working on too. I want to create a more efficient youth league for kids in our area. And you say league when they just sign up and they go play in the YMCA and the rec. I genuinely want to create a better input for young athletes and young parents so that they don't have to wander on their mental model of what sports could be. I've changed my mindset in that I do believe at young ages, third, fourth, fifth, and partially because that's where I was. I mean, in fifth grade, I played for an AAU national title. It was South Carolina versus Tennessee, and we were in Orlando. I'll never forget those experiences and how they motivated me. But they were great experiences because my dad put me in a great experience. One of the things I think is important to me that I've changed my mindset on a little bit more is being able to connect with kids that may or may not be able to absorb it or take it as a habit. There's so much influence in tablets and social media in these days. And the more we let kids watch the highlight reels, I think they work on the wrong things. I'm as big a Steph Curry fan as ever. I actually have a golf tournament idea that I think him and I could win that we won't talk about because when it comes to free throws, three-point shooting, and putting, I'll take him on my team and he might like me or he may not, but I'd like to be his teammate. I talk about kids learning stuff that isn't really relevant to what their success will be. And I think the fight against kids watching or absorbing stuff as traditional or fact is something that all coaches, they have to do it on their, they have to make a really hard decision on how much they want to fight it or create stuff that is just going to be a right message for them. So that's one of my daily struggles that I know that I could do more on. Everybody feels like they do a lot, but I think truly some of the great coaches, it's like they're never satisfied. And I know that's where you lie and all the Bill Belichicks of the world as well. I think that's the beauty of sport is that they're never content.
Yeah, no, as soon as you get content, it's time to do something else. And that's where I said early on, one of the many great things about athletics is you're getting constant feedback loops that you can't get anywhere else. Both success, failure, things you need to work on, all of that is just constantly in your face. And the same for coaching. If you are putting the right people around you that are dissenting voice, that are accountability partners in regards to, hey, why did you do this? And then just even debriefing those things. So I think that's a super important lesson to take away. If people want to listen to you in your daily show, coach, where do they find that?
It's called ESPN Radio, The Ticket. It's on the Central Coast. You can find it online. The show is called The Sports Bite, BITE, Sports Bite. I've had a number of partners over the years, but my current partner is Mike Abram. He runs a lot of different golf things, and our show does have a golf component, but it's called The Sports Bite. It's on terrestrial radio. It's online as well. So that's that. And then all the Compass Media stuff. If you find Compass Media, they're known for much more than college basketball. They do NFL stuff. They do obviously the college football stuff, and they have a multitude of other shows. So that's that. And then if you want to find me at Three Ball, come to San Luis Obispo. People ask, yeah, you got a buddy in Texas. Like, when are we going to do Three Ball in Texas? I said, do you have the patience and the time and the delivery that we've been able to put together here? Then we could talk. But look, the game's about sharing. I went back, I said earlier, train, compete, share. And those are broad words, but we drill down into little sequences. When it all comes down to it, parents, family, they shared and showed me, and we're just trying to pay it forward to others. So train, compete, share. Three Ball in San Luis Obispo. It's a niche, but it's as living in a special part of the world and still being able to have sports fun is the best thing in life.
No doubt. And on that note, not everything is meant to be scalable, friend in Texas.
Right.
To your point is, hey, this is what we do. You can build the Texas version of it. I'll give you the blueprint, but back to your being genuine and authentic. That's the big part of it. So I think that's a great way to wrap up. Appreciate you being here today, Coach. Looking forward to seeing you if I ever make it down to see my children or you get back up here to watch some golf.
Hey, onward to the Pirates, man. You're living the dream there. Keep them rolling and always appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this too. Contacts, young coaches, fun coaches, even old guys that are able to reflect on stories from young people. We've all learned from someone and we'll continue to learn from you. Thanks, man.
This podcast was also brought to you by ttroops.com. As coaches, our inboxes will get flooded with noise on how to make your program better. TeachHoops.com will get you focused on what needs to get done. One thing you've heard from these podcasts is no matter the experience, you got to keep pushing yourself to be better. Coach Steve Collins will help you direct that noise. He is there to help you. He has the credentials as a coach, and he's never turned down an Teach Hoops member. Sign up for a plan at TeachHoops.com. And mention us at checkout. This site is here simply to help you be better. Take advantage and see you on the court. Remember, go to teachhoops.com.
This episode is brought to you by Element, spelled L-M-N-T. What is Element? It's a delicious sugar-free electrolyte drink mix. As a coach, we are constantly trying to find the best products for our athletes to train and compete at their highest level. Element is a great alternative to other commercial recovery and performance drinks and has enough sodium, potassium, and magnesium to get you feeling and performing your best. Plus, it has zero sugar, no artificial ingredients, and is gluten-free. With 8 delicious flavors, you're guaranteed to find one your taste buds will love. I know our athletes love the citrus salt. We keep a variety box in the office and our athletes stop by every day on their way to practice and games to load up. At this point, they won't even touch another electrolyte product. Without amazing products and sponsors like Element, our podcast would not be possible. Right now, when you click on our affiliate link and place your first Element order, Element will give us 100% commission. Last thing, Element might have the best return policy on the planet. If you don't love it, you'll be instantly refunded.